Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome. I am so happy you are here today. You are listening to Alive and Live. I am Lisa D here on 1-2 Radio. We are changing the way you listen to the world. We have a very special guest today. Her name is Paulina Howfield. She is a speaker, NDE-er. And welcome, Paulina, all the way from Australia.
Thank you, Lisa. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us how you had your NDE.
Well, I was a spiritual seeker, and I was traveling seeking things, but also remembering things, and I was living in Israel in a spiritual community, and I'd had a problem with what I thought was a tummy bug, which turned out to be a problem with a cyst on an ovary. And I saw a medical specialist in the morning of the 13th of December. And I then, later that night, the cyst ruptured, and that's what was the trigger for the near-death experience.
Wow, that's pretty intense, because I know those can be severely painful from experience.
Yeah.
So were you transported to the hospital? What happened?
Well, I was in a community, and there was a community nurse who I didn't know, because there'd been no call for me to have a community nurse before. Somebody went off to get the nurse. It became very clear that I needed to be transported to hospital as soon as possible. So I was bundled in a car. I had somebody driving the car, a man who was a student doctor. The community nurse was the passenger in front of the car, and I was in the back. And as I got myself in the car, I instinctively knew. I'm quite tall, so laying down in the back of a car is not an easy option for me.
Right.
But I instinctively knew if I lay down and put my head flat, I would not survive.
Oh, wow. That's scary.
And I don't know why I knew that, but I did. And so I was trying to get myself comfortable, because the ride to the hospital would be at least 20 minutes, half an hour.
Right.
And this big blue eye, which I consider the eye of the universe, came kind of knocking at the crown chakra, third eye area of my being, and began to very quickly let me know it was time to leave out that way. So I followed the eye, and I ended up outside my body. Above the car, I could see the three bodies in the car. I could see the highway that we were on and the roads. I could then see in the distance the towns and villages. It was night time. It was about 10:30 in the evening. So it was dark, and there were lights everywhere. And then I was out into the planets, and then I was sucked out into the galaxies. And then it continued on from there.
So you were in, you said Israel, is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, and just to touch on that, what was your background as far as religious beliefs and afterlife beliefs at that time?
Well, I had grown up, not necessarily, I wasn't in a religious family, and I wasn't in a non-spiritual family, but my mother had a deep faith, I believe, but I had always known instinctively that there was something else to the world. I just knew it. I felt that there were past lives. I had interactions with what people would call the devic realms of, like, fairies, gnomes, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I believed in that sort of thing, and I often had interactions with that, and I would say I was very telepathic and clairvoyant. I say that now. At the time, I just knew things.
Mm-hmm.
So I had that, but I had a deep, I just felt that it was about becoming as good spiritually as we could, although some of those words were not part of my language, really. So I was on a search. I just felt I needed to travel and find places, find aspects of me, and I was very interested in the soul and the psyche and art therapy, that kind of thing. So I was very much concerned about who we are, where we come from, why we're here.
So you were following your journey, it sounds like a life path to me, to find your beliefs and discover more of that, and it led you to Israel, and then you have this near-death experience. It's like, I mean, it's like, here you go, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It was interesting because Israel is a place where a lot of people go in order to develop a close relationship to God or religion. Christian people who go there, you have obviously the Jewish people who go there, the people who are talking about spirituality generally, they go there because they feel close to God and the history of God. And so I remember when I was walking around the community that I lived on, and it was olive groves and farming land, and I felt somehow close to Jesus or God, really.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't expecting to get quite so close to God as I can.
So you see this eye, you follow this eye, it leads you above your vehicle, and you're floating in, you know, some type of astrological space. What happened then?
Well, I was moving through space. I could see the planets. I was in the stars, really, and I could hear what some people have called the audible life stream, which they believe is the sound of consciousness. So I could hear noises. It was harmonious. It wasn't unpleasant. And then I was aware at some point, as I was moving through this space, the galaxies, that if somebody asked me a question, I seemed to know the answer to everything. There was a deep knowing, and it wasn't, it didn't come from a place of arrogance or ego. It came from a place of complete wonder, like, oh my gosh, wow. And then I was in what I could best describe as corridors of light. So it would be like the ground of, or the floor of those corridors was like cloud or very white light.
Mm-hmm.
And there were doors on either side, and I instinctively knew that those doors were points of access for past life memories or future things, or maybe even what some people would call Akashic records, but I instinctively knew that they were accessible to me. And in that light, I felt that I had this knowing. And I've just got to backtrack, because I've just realized I've missed quite an important thing, and that was that on the way through there in the galaxies, I realized that I was, well, the wind swept through, just like air, you know, mm-hmm. went through, then the fire went through, then the water went through, and then the earth went through. So I had this sense of, I'm not my body, I'm just element. I'm just some kind of element of some kind.
Pause for a second. You went through earth, wind, fire, or did it pass you? I mean, go in a little more detail if you would.
Okay, sure. Well, I was in space, so to speak, so I could see planets, galaxies, and I could see the stars, and I felt like I was that. Mm-hmm. And then the only way to describe the wind really was it whipped through, so it came through me.
Ah. Oh.
It came through me, rushed through, and then the other elements rushed through, and I realized that I was not a body. I was elemental. I was the elements of the universe.
How powerful did you feel? I mean, that must have felt very empowering.
It did. It deeply profound and very connected. And just, there was a great sense of wonder and wowness.
Yeah, I bet.
And I don't know how long that process of being the elements lasted, but I was aware that by the time I was in the corridors of lights or whatever, I was just elemental essence. The everything was one, and I was in the sea of consciousness and the light, but I wasn't even thinking about a body at that point.
So did you feel like the fluid movement of being water and the burn of being fire?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Cool.
So that when you see water running and you know it is a consciousness, when you see that, it's like, yes, I was water and I could feel the coolness of water and the fluidity of water and the joyful essence of water. And with the fire, there was heat, like, whoa, it was just not volcanic heat, because it was a kind of a cool heat in a weird way, but it was definitely consuming.
Awesome.
And powerful, and the air was that sort of just ran through, like took all anything that, it's like if you're in a very windy place and the air, it's not so much that it takes your breath away, but you can almost feel it washing everything away or blowing everything away.
That's really neat. And then you saw the Ashaic Records and you had all these opportunities to pick a path, I assume?
I could see all these doorways and I was in the light and I realized that I wasn't a body and that I wasn't, none of us were, but that I wasn't a body, that it was all something much, much bigger in consciousness and light. It was predominantly light. And, that everything was interconnected. And then I had this sense of, so if you're not your body, what are you carrying around? And I had been traveling with a backpack, and so on a symbolic level, it was like, oh, I'm carrying a heavy backpack at the moment. So it was like, let all that go. And yes, this is really important. You're remembering things, and what are you going to, I don't think it was a concrete thought of what are you going to do, but I had a really deep sense of it was time to really take my path, and I didn't know exactly what that meant, as in on a day-to-day level, but it was, you've come to do these things and start doing them consciously, because I really had a sense I'd been doing it unconsciously, mm-hmm. but I needed to do it with full conscious awareness.
Mm.
And I got a very strong message that I needed to go and do training in art therapy. I'd already done some, but then it was like, really get that clear your own field, work with people who are dying, and help people reach the invisible realms.
Wow. Now, did you see the whole, like, your past life, your present, your future? Did you see that video of your life?
I didn't see a video of my life. What I did experience in that sort of reckoning of, gosh, you've got a backpack on your back and it's pretty heavy, I had a sense of the connections that I had with people and some past events that had really weighed on me, if that makes sense, because I was seeing it as a weight. But I didn't have a past life review and I didn't have a future review. I just had a very, very deep connection to, you are not your body, you are consciousness, and that's all there is.
Wow. So it sounds like you, not to put you on a pedestal, but it sounds like you're like at a higher level to where you just like, you went back to where you left off at. Like you've already done all that other work. You are already open to move on and advance. Does that make sense?
Yeah, what you're saying makes sense. I don't know if that's the case, but I do know that, and that's why it was important for me to go back and talk about the four elements, because when I returned after the experience and processing it, and I think it's a lifetime processing, to be honest, I don't think it gets sorted in just, I don't think there's a time frame that you say it's sorted now. I think there's always an opportunity for further understanding.
Absolutely.
But I did some research. I was curious about other people's experiences. There was quite a lot being written about people's experiences at the time, often from a point of view of science rather than necessarily consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't come across any other people's stories about the four elements. So I was always curious about that. I came across research that suggested we have five stages, and some people do all five and some people only do one or two, and that's about whether or not we reach the light or whether we meet a figure that may be Jesus or someone important or a family member. There were all these stages that people had done research about. But I'd never had this sort of sense of other people having this experience. Now, I'm not saying they haven't. I just never came across it. And I was at a Buddhist gathering some years back, maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And I'd been to many others before. But obviously the pupil, me, was ready to hear something that I hadn't heard before or hadn't really processed before. And one of the monks was, through a translator, was talking about process of dying and how they teach the monks to navigate the bardo, which is the place between life and death and moving back into consciousness. And he began to talk about the four elements, and he said, this is why it's important that people train in this, because if you cannot navigate the elements in the fifth dimension and the astral realms, which is the fourth dimension, then you can easily get stuck. And I suddenly realized I must have had this experience in other times for me to know how to do that, or for me to have that experience and come out of it something.
Right. Can you repeat that? That you have to have experienced the four elements in order to say that again?
My understanding of what he said, and it was through a translator, so I need to be really clear about that. My understanding was each element has something that can teach us about the physical form and that we are not physical form. But they work with moving through those elements to gain access permanently to the bardo. And in some Buddhist trainings, certainly they mention it in the book, Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, very early in the book, I think it's something like in the first 30 pages, there's a discussion of a monk who dies, and they do rituals for a period of days, like a long lot of days, to help the body move over. And he was shut away on his request before he died, and there was chanting, and when they next went into the room, all that was left of him was hair and nails, and everything else had gone.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? So,
yeah.
And when I talk about that, I always get a shiver. It's like, yes, this is about, not just about saying we're more than our bodies and that consciousness is there and that there is an afterlife. It's about how do we move through the vessel of the body and become a conscious being in consciousness so that we don't continue to separate from soul or source.
Have you found out how to do that?
I think that's part of this journey for me. And, you know, I hope that I'm getting closer, but I might just be full of thinking I'm a little bit closer. I think so. I don't know for sure, but it's certainly been part of my pathway and helping others to recognize that too if I can.
That's definitely a deep quest to follow. So what happened next?
So I was in the light and experiencing that and the profoundness of it. And I had a sense that there were other beings around, but for me it was very much about remembering and just experiencing the light. And then I felt a jolt, and the people who were in the car that my body was in had realized that I wasn't alive or that they couldn't get a pulse. So the nurse was trying to get a pulse, and she was touching my neck and she was touching my wrist, and it was touching my wrist and my hand jolted me back. And then I was in the car with them. I was in pain and I was in crisis. My body was in crisis. And then I went to the hospital. I had tests done. I had some procedures done. Then they felt that I would be okay and that I would get back to the UK, which is where I'm from, as soon as possible. And then over the next 24 to 36 hours, I just kept leaving my body. I couldn't stay in my body. I just wasn't capable of staying in, and I had this insight, you need to get, your oversoul needs to come back in. And you need to get your oversoul back in. So I was very dehydrated. I wasn't very well with the shock of everything that had gone on to the physical body. And I just knew I needed water. And it wasn't water to drink. It was water on the outside of the body. So as soon as I could, I wanted to get water on my body. And the only way I could do that, and it sounds very dramatic, was to climb off the bed, crawl along the floor, crawl into the bathroom, turn the tap on. And as soon as I did that, I felt my oversoul starting to come back in.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, we're getting close to a break, and I love your stories. It's so different from some of the other stories that I've heard. But when we get back, we will hear the rest. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to Alive and Live here on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you listen to the world. Be right back.
Changing the way we listen to the world.
Basically came back to your body after you had your experience. How much time had passed?
That's a really good question. I'm not 100% sure, but I would say somewhere between 5 minutes to 10 minutes, basically, because I was in the car traveling, so I couldn't have been that long away, but it felt like it was a long, long time.
That's pretty amazing that you experienced as much as you did in that short period of time, because a lot of NDEers that I talk to, I mean, they'll be gone for hours and not get as far as you did. So that's why, I mean, you're probably on an advanced level compared to a lot of us.
I don't know. I mean, the time, I think that was one of the aspects of the experience, was that time is a concept.
Correct.
Time is not something that is actually real. And so how long is a minute and how long is 60 seconds? They're the same length of time, but we talk about them as if they're different. So, yeah, I don't know why it was like that, but I was in the car, like I said, at the beginning, the car, the drive was about 20 minutes, and it happened during that time frame. So the maximum it could have been would have been, I'd say, 15 minutes.
That's really awesome to have a 15-minute trip to heaven and back. So what did, I mean, did you just, like, you healed and then you're like, wow, that was cool and I'm still processing this? I mean, what happened afterwards?
Well, I got well enough to travel back to the UK. I knew I needed to have some procedures done in the UK to deal with damage from the experience of the cyst rupturing. And I also knew that I needed to do some art therapy or something other, as well as investigate more of my past lives. So when I got back to the UK, apart from the attention to my physical form, I began to do a different level of spiritual investigation that was focusing very much on past lives, me remembering things. I was doing mediumship and telepathic training so that I could brush those skills up. I was remembering a lot of things. I was meeting people, as you often do when you have sort of something that you need to meet all these people or you need to remember things. And I was focusing on that and trying to, and also working with people who were dying, so and doing the research to try and figure out what was going on. And I, in my art therapy training, I had a fabulous person who was running that group training program. And on a number of occasions, I wanted to incorporate my experience into some of my understanding of the soul. And I had conversations with her, and I really like her and have great respect for her, but I realized that we were just on different dimensions, if you like, when we were talking about it. So part of my journey was feeling separate, although I know I'm deeply connected to consciousness and we're never alone. I just felt like I was now looking for some of my family, myself, my connection.
What was some of your past lives? Can you describe them a little bit?
Yeah, one of them was in I was on the borders of Spain and France, and I believe that I was a knight that was connected to the realms of the kingdom. And so I had, in my memories of that, I was very much connected to having information that needed to be shared from one place to another. I've had memories of being a knight during the Knights of the Templar times, in goddess temples around the world, just ordinary people as well, times when Atlantis fell, times when, the floods came and temples collapsed, and being asked to carry information from one place to another, sometimes through the physical form, sometimes through the mental telepathic form and other, and like I guess what Australian Aborigines would do with song lines, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had lies in along the Mediterranean area, lies in Egypt, lots of them that I can think of, and lies not on this planet.
Wow, see what I mean? You've got a lot of experience. I mean, if that was all a resume, you are definitely your resume, you would get the job. Does that make sense? I mean, I look at a lot of, I mean, I've interviewed a lot of NDEers, I've talked to a lot of NDEers, but where you're coming from is like at such a different level. I mean, it's more of an advanced level, seriously. I don't know if anybody else, any of the other listeners feel that way, but I definitely feel that way. So, if anybody has never had a past life regression, do it, because it's pretty amazing. You discover more about yourself and so, like some of the scars that you might have from those past life regressions. Like I did one and I was ran over as I was 6 years old. I was ran over by a cart carrying goods, horse and buggy type of thing, and broke my back and obviously killed me. And I have scoliosis today in those exact same spots. So do you have any scars like that from your past lives?
I do. I do in my spine and in other places in my joints. And yes, absolutely. And that is a great example of sometimes, and I don't know if that is the case for you, but if you had if you had an injury in a past life, it may always be something that plays up, or it may come to a certain age in your life when that happened in a previous time, and then it becomes active. And then you investigate it and you realize, oh, okay, that's at that life when I had that at, I don't know, 30 or whatever, that was when I died from it. And it's become active in this life because I'm the same age now and it's time to clear it. So, yes, often you'll have physical, you may have emotional imprints as well. I personally believe that while we do have past lives, definitely, I also think that we can bring in an imprint, an energetic stamp from a time frame that's not necessarily something that we experienced, but we have brought it with us in order to help us understand more. So, because people have said to me, well, how come there's so many people who say they were Cleopatra or they were around at the time of Jesus? Or, and I think, well, in powerful times in history, you want to have that capacity to be able to process whatever that is. So there are physical things that we have, but I think there's also emotional memories and consciousness memories that we bring forward in our past lives as well.
Absolutely, and I think those are more powerful.
Absolutely.
Yes. There was, my sister told me, because she goes to India quite often, that there was a little boy in India that was born without an arm, and as he got older, he would tell people the story of how he lost his arm in what they believed was a previous life. This child was born without an arm, so that's definitely an earmark of a past life, especially when a child can, innocently enough, can tell you how he lost his arm in his past life.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's also interesting that they're in India, because India is a country that believes in reincarnation. And so they take it seriously. And often they can find the family or the area that that person lived in before. And in my life, I've had experiences, and I mentioned one of them in the book about Isis and working with the goddess temples. And I'm kind of having some kind of, I guess, telepathic clairvoyant experience as I'm driving along in the car, and then I realize that, wow, I've been here before. This is really me in this area, and I needed to park the car because I was having an experience where I shouldn't be driving.
Wow.
And I just knew instinctively that I needed to go up the road a bit, turn left, and there was a big car parking space. And that car parking space is obviously present now, or was then, because people drive cars. But back in the lifetime I had there, it was the time of the night, and I'd had a previous life there also during the goddess temples, that there weren't cars then. But so they were all kind of being jumbled together, and that's, I think, part of the trick of understanding them is you begin to experience them energetically. So what is this really teaching me? Is it just teaching me that I had an injury in a past life? Or is it teaching me that I had some unfinished business from a past life? Or that I've actually had a few injuries in different lives that are all impacting the same area? What can I learn from this?
Yeah, those are very good questions, and that kind of leads us to our own personal journeys. Can you tell the listeners a little briefly about Goddess Isis?
Okay. Well, this is my understanding of Goddess Isis. She's one of the 12 archetypal energies that have been seeding our planet, or were connected to our archetypal memories. If we don't want to go into seeding our planet, we'll go into our archetypal memories. And her and Isis were brother and sister. And they had a brother called Set, and Set represents the shadow side of our consciousness, that bit which we don't wish to access. And Osiris were a couple, because that's how it resonates within those stories, and Isis has been called different things in different cultures. And Set was jealous and killed Osiris. And cut Osiris up into different pieces, and hid him along the River Nile. And Isis went looking for him, and with each piece of the body that she reclaimed, a temple was created. So when you travel on the Nile, you're reclaiming that aspect of parts of you that have been severed or forgotten, but you're also reclaiming the divine feminine. And the only bit she never found of Isis was his penis, which was said to have been thrown to the fishes. And so that's where it links into stories about, if women are in power, we emasculate men.
Interesting. Very interesting. And you wrote a book about this, correct? Reconnecting the Divine Feminine Goddess Temples of Malta, is that correct?
That's correct. It's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it?
But
yeah. I know, because I was given that title by people upstairs, so to speak, and I was thinking, oh, it's a bit long, guys. So yes, I wrote about that because after my awakening, as more and more information came forward, and I realised that in past lives I've been participating in certain things about helping others awaken and helping the planet to cleanse it, her fields, though does she really need our help? But I'm aware that we all have our different jobs to do. So working as a light worker and an esoteric map maker, and in this life I needed to go to places around the planet to participate in that. So in the 1980s I was working on some churches in London. And from that, it became absolutely clear that I needed to go to Malta to work with the goddess temples there to facilitate being in the feminine consciousness, and also reconnect those areas to parts of England and parts of the world where they'd been severed over the millennia of our human intervention in how the energy lines on the planet work. So I went to Malta and was investigating telepathically and clairvoyantly the energy centers from the goddess times, which is around anywhere between sort of 3,000 to 5,000 BC. They may be a little bit older, a little bit younger, but around that sort of general time frame. And then Malta had a really history that it's had periods of great divine feminine consciousness, which was the goddess temples, and the island of Gozo was dedicated to the goddess Calypso. It's been one of the places on the planet that's had a very strong Catholic. In AD 60, Paul was shipwrecked there, and he started a Catholic religion there that was so huge it kind of almost competed with the Vatican. The Knights Templars have been there, and the Knights of Malta, and then throughout history, because it was a natural port, lots of war leaders like Nelson and Napoleon, and way back to the Phoenicians, they've all spent time there. So it has this amazing history, and of course each era leaves an imprint, an energetic stamp there. And so part of it was to the work that I was doing there was to help realign the frequencies there, clear away imprints that have, I guess, imprinted shadow, so you know, that unconscious aspect of ourselves and our forgetfulness, and also to cleanse and realign damage that was done during the Second World War, when Malta was one of the most heavily bombed places of the entire planet.
Really?
Yeah, during the Second World War. And interestingly, the temples that were there weren't damaged, and I find that fascinating. These are small islands in the middle of a big ocean, and there was lots of damage done, but the temples stayed in place, and so they've got some powerful forces there holding those together. You know, sacred geometric patterns, when you place them in a building, they can make them impregnable.
Mm. And I apologize for any technical energy that the listeners are hearing. I mean, for one, she's on the other side of the world, but two, she's very energetic, obviously. But no, that's okay. We're hearing you. That's good. One of my questions is, do you think we have the power to heal the world? And if so, how?
Okay, good question. I think each of us, if we are who we really are and who we came to be, we can heal anything. And I don't say that lightly. What I mean is we have a lot of sovereignty energy that we have forgotten how to access. And if we access that energy and those memories, we can become aware of just what we're really capable of from a level of deep love and connection. And from that, we can begin to change our own lives and heal our own essences and reconnect, remember, and recall on the soul level. And if we do that as individuals and come together as groups, we can peacefully and lovingly and generously and unconditionally change the framework of this planet.
I agree. I think there's a lot of power with coming together, power of prayer, and like you said, coming together in love and joining. In Australia or some of the other cultures that you are involved in, is there like a day of the month or a day of the week or a day of the year that you celebrate or have like a healing prayer day for the world?
On a cultural basis or on an individual basis for me?
Either or.
Okay, on an individual basis for me, that's an everyday event.
good.
And sometimes it's more than just once a day. You know, it's kind of like I'm very connected to how we can remember our sovereignty and really all become the awakened beings that we can potentially be. Mm-hmm. And in different cultures that I go to, each culture has its own resonance, and some will do it weekly, some will do it monthly, some will do it once a year. And they, particularly people who are working with the light, are very much about, let's do it on a full moon, or let's do it on a solstice. We're coming up to a solstice now. I always like to use that energy of the celestial heavens to work with in order to change frameworks if we can. And running healing groups and running meditation circles, and some people would call them prayer circles as well, on a regular basis is a profound thing to do, because it really does change things. Back in 1987, Jose Arguelles, he began the Harmonic Convergence, and the Harmonic Convergence came to him via a near-death experience. And in August of 1987, people gathered around the world in different places, some with consciousness and some with just to reactivate those sites on the planet and create a harmonic convergence of energy in the consciousness grid of our planet and our bodies. And so when we come together for prayer, or we come together for ceremony, we come together for attention, we can make huge difference.
Yeah, I agree. I have a prayer, a healing prayer that I call it on my website at ldevers.com. Mm-hmm. And there's also a World Peace Day that's on November 21st every year, where everybody around the world prays for world peace, obviously. And, of course, you can implement whatever you want. And you have a great website, too, www.matrixharmonics.com, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, and on there I talk about doing an angel day in August, and I did that some years back, but if you pick up on that energy in August, practicing random acts of kindness, being an angel for the day, I mean, what a great thing to do to start changing how we interact with the world.
Absolutely. And it's so important. If you don't meditate on a daily basis or say prayer on a daily basis, somehow implement it in your life and pray for what you think is important, because it does matter, whether it's world peace, environmental, world healing, healing people, animals, whatever. Just if that's anything that you can do, at least take a moment to do that.
And intention has great power. What we intend, which is what prayer is, isn't it? Well, and meditation, it's creating an intention. So if we create an intention for a peaceful world, we are sending that out into the ethers.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Paulina. We'd love to have you back another time, but we are getting close to the top of the hour, and I want to thank everybody for joining us in the Facebook chat room as well, and all the way from Australia. It's been awesome to have you. But we are at the top of the hour. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Don't forget, you can reach Paulina at matrixharmonics.com, and she also has the book, Reconnecting the Divine Feminine, The Goddess Temples of Malta. I hope I said that correctly. If not, yes, you can find it on our website. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We're here at Alive and Live with Lisa D and Paulina Hoffield on 1-2 Radio, where we're changing the way you listen to the world.
Thanks, Lisa. Bye. Thanks, everybody.